Don Tenorio and his people have served an invaluable function, yet they cannot be permitted to continue obstructing amid growing crisis.
And how exactly are they obstructing, if you don't mind my asking, Don Hector?
It was a warm morning, not really hot, as was frequently the case in the valley. Though the sun was halfway up the sky, the earth and air still smelled of the rain that had fallen the latter half of the night. Fresh, clean rain, Ryan thought. No chem taint. He looked to Christy, who stood near him, arms folded, face shaded by her hat. She smiled. A man could get used to that. Clean earth, clean air, clean water. A man and his mate might be able to settle here, get some kind of life going. He almost laughed out loud at his own fanciful nature. Allowing himself to wander into such sponge-sugar wishfulness, here in the midst of what might or might not be an enemy camp, with a horde of enemies, human and mutie, just over the northern horizon and bearing down. Mildred was right. The strain of constant road, constant danger, was grinding on them. The bearings in his mind were getting worn. Out on the beat-down field in front of and below them, 30 nearly naked young men performed calisthenics, practiced combat, unarmed or with old-time weapons, or unarmed defense against melee weapons. They all looked, near as may be, like the companion's host. Tall, even for men from the north where the travelers hailed from, copper-skinned, muscular, with long coarse hair the color of spun anthracite. Not clones, but almost might as well have been. A trio of young men in the fanciful headdresses and the funny-looking partial armor the companions had seen before stalked among them. They were apparently officers or cadre. One of them, Ryan was pretty sure, was Two Arrow, who had led the patrol that had tried to capture them in the sacked ville. He kept flicking glances up at the top of the hill where his cacique and the visitors watched from. The glances didn't seem overly friendly.
Our valley has been invaded, as you are all too well aware, Senora Wyeth.
Don Hector wore a simple short white robe with gold trim and sandals. His midnight hair was cut square front and back and swung freely just above his impressively broad shoulders. His face was wide, cheekbones pronounced, his jaw a shelf of bone. He was a handsome man, exuding an animal vitality. Such was his energy that he seemed barely able to keep still, but was constantly pacing back and forth within the shade cast by the awning.
Nothing less than complete unity of purpose will permit us to survive this crisis. Don Tenorio's attempt to stick to what he calls autonomy smacks of selfishness. What's called for is selflessness, sacrifice.
A hill rose like a ramp, practically from the western shore of the lake, rising gradually to a height of a few hundred feet above the surrounding farmland and lava badlands that veined it. At the far end, perched at the verge of a cliff, lay the jumbled ruins of an old palace. The ruin was called Chapultepec Castle, after the hill itself. Chapultepec, they were told, meant place of the grasshopper. Don Hector had his current headquarters in a much more modest but still sizable villa built of wood or adobe in some woods east of the castle, which had either better weathered the earthquakes caused by the Soviet nuke charges, or been rebuilt, or even constructed entirely since the war. The practice ground lay east of that, at the foot of a small rise. The companions, their host, and his small retinue stood or sat in the shade of a stand on the top of the low hill, basically uprights of PVC pipe stuck in the ground and holding up a roof of corrugated fiberglass of an unusually unpleasant shade of green. Two servants, a young man and young woman in white robes, stood by, serving them from pitchers of lemonade and plates of fruit, some of them exotic kinds Ryan had never encountered before. The cacique had no guards, leaving aside the 30 or so fanatic man-chillers drilling on the grounds below them. His sec boss, Mendoza, had accompanied them, however, and now sat at a salvaged tubular steel and plastic picnic table, downing lemonade in great gulps and dabbing his broad, sweaty forehead with a succession of handkerchiefs. Ryan had heard Tenorio, who didn't usually seem to go in for uncharitable assessments, describe his rival's sec boss as a gross beast. The description was adequate, if a trifle underdone. There was a good 400 pounds of him stuffed into his khaki uniform and spilling off both sides of the camp stool that tremulously supported him. There were huge, dark half-moons of sweat stained into the fabric beneath his arms. His face was immensely wide, a blurred square, that looked as if it had started out strong and maybe even handsome, and subsequently bloated up like a corpse's. The contrast to his own boss and the sec men, nominally under his command, all of whom looked as if they'd stepped off posters for some pre-dark health spa, couldn't have been more comically extreme. The hair matted to his head and in his profuse mustache was a deep, rich red with metallic undertones. His dark olive face was spattered with darker freckles, concentrated on a nose that looked as if it had been broken often enough that it had just given over any pretense of having some kind of shape, like the rest of him. Only in the hues of his hair and skin did he bear any noticeable resemblance to his human panther of a daughter. Don Hector ignored his obese sec chief, seeming to enjoy strutting and holding forth for his outland visitors. He gestured down at the warriors, struggling and shining and sweating in the sun.
My Eagle Knights, my personal bodyguard and commandos, all devoted to me. Not that all my people aren't, of course, but these in particular have demonstrated their total commitment and zeal.
Interesting you train them so extensively with knives and clubs and whatnot, when some of them carry lasers.
They practice the traditional martial arts of their forebears. It strengthens their cultural identity as well as their bodies and minds. And also, of course, training in the use of simple weapons or no weapons at all serves the most practical of purposes. More technologically advanced weapons may break or run out of ammunition or energy. And then a warrior must fall back on his fists and feet and cunning, and his warrior spirit.
Well, that's surely true, but a good many people don't know it. Where did your boys get those fancy laser bracelets we saw in that abandoned ville, anyways, if you don't mind my asking? They're about the most advanced I've seen or cut sign of.
We discovered them in a hidden laboratory, one that was apparently buried underground even before the war. Our scientists are working on duplicating them, of course.
The companions looked at one another, trying not to be obvious about it. Was there another redoubt hidden hereabouts? Had Don Hector and his people been the ones to clear out the base on Popocatepetl's flank?
It's a very impressive show, Don Hector. But I have to wonder why you're going to the trouble of showing it to us. After all, we're pretty much just visiting.
That in itself makes you special. We have had so few visitors in the last 100 years or so.
He gestured for the maidservant to refill his goblet, which was massive, carved from milky quartz.
You displayed great courage and resourcefulness in making your way here, my friends. That causes you to be of interest to me. A man much in need of those very traits to meet the current emergency. And my good friend Don Tenorio seems to regard you highly. And while I admit to questioning his military and political acumen, he does have a very keen judgment where value is concerned. And indeed, why may I not, as I gather he has, indulge my curiosity for tidings of the world north of the radiation belts and lethal chemical storms?
Your people didn't seem to have in mind inviting us here as honored guests when we first ran across them, Don Hector.
Surely a woman as perceptive as yourself can understand our need for caution. We are at war. And as you may have heard, rare as they are, we have received visitors from Il Norte before, and not all of them so well-intentioned as yourselves. Apparently, they thought to reenact the great myth of Cortes, in which a handful of white men conquers a whole land full of red men.
Then again, we're not exactly all white men.
Indeed, indeed. Mistakes have been made. That much is certain.
What can you tell us about these muties who are invading your valley, Don Hector?
Hector raised an eyebrow in showy surprise.
Don Tenorio has told you little? But I see it must be so. How typical of the man. A great man, a visionary, and genius beyond doubt, but otherworldly. Totally unprepared to face the often brutal challenges of the real world in which we live. Thus, he prefers to hide from facts, to avoid dealing with or speaking of the threat we all face. Here is an example of why the people and the valley must be united under my rule. I do not shrink from the truth.
He was pacing back and forth in front of them, emphasizing his words with thrusts of a thick forefinger. Ryan reflected that Tenorio had to have a little more taste for confronting harsh reality than his rival Baron had led on. He had chosen to grind his face right into it when he had led the first scavies into the haunted, mutant-riddled artificial canyons and canals of the city in the lake. Ryan and the others had seen him in action the day before, plunging into danger without hesitation when he thought his people needed aid. Nor had the alcalde frozen or played the coward when they were ambushed. He possessed all the courage and presence of mind any man could use, whether or not he was a particularly efficacious fighter. The problem, though, was that Ryan was inclined to agree with Don Hector's larger thesis. For all his strengths, Tenorio didn't strike him as the man to face down the Chichimec horde. There it was, the bare fact, as ugly as a sticky and smelling twice as bad. It was also true that in their time as Don Tenorio's guests, though they had spent many hours in conversation concerning both life in the Deathlands and in the Valiant City, scarcely a word had been uttered concerning the invaders. There was a difference, Trader had taught him long ago when he was an untried pup, between physical courage and moral courage. Despite the fact he was no man of action, was it possible Don Tenorio possessed more of the former than the latter? The tall, handsome baron said something to his sweltering sec boss in Spanish. Mendoza replied in the same language, sounding despondent. Doc sidled up next to Ryan.
I trust, my dear Ryan, that just because yon hulk does not appear to understand English, that we do not take it on faith he truly does not comprehend everything we might say.
Thanks, Doc, but I'm there already. A baron's gratitude, the honesty of a sec boss.
Alike chimerical. You are a wise young man, Ryan. Still, I did not wish to take aught for granted.
Anytime you think you see something I miss, you speak right up, Doc.
The old man nodded gravely. Hector finished his conversation with Mendoza, who now began to eat green grapes from a silver bowl on the table. He stepped up in front of his guests as though mounting a stage.
For years we have had dealings with the Indian tribes to the north, the people we call Chichimecs. Sometimes we traded with them. Sometimes they raided us for our crops and wealth. Sometimes we sent military expeditions north to discourage them from such acts. But for the most part, they stayed in the deserts on their side of the mountains, and we on ours. The great Chichimeca is a savage place. As you may know, the north of our once great country received more direct damage from the war than did our capital. The price it paid for proximity to America del Norte and the military bases in Texas especially. The radiation belts and chemical storms that so afflict your homeland extend to the northern reaches of Chichimec territory, enough that mutants are frequently born into their tribes, especially the more northern ones. These traditionally have been considered witches, evil but unlucky to kill. So mutant babies are taken out into the scrub and left. Other mutants would come and collect them, or not. Thus, the surviving mutants formed bands of their own, living in uneasy coexistence with their fully human kin, sometimes clashing, more often trying to ignore one another. Would you care for food?
I wouldn't mind some fruit. What's this one?
It is a papaya.
Much sour, but not too bad.
The earth shifted beneath their feet. Out on the training ground, the combat practice continued without notice. Ryan reflexively took a step toward Christy. She smiled and made a tiny gesture with her hand to indicate she was fine. More than that, it appeared spots of color had come to her cheeks, and she was standing a trifle straighter than before. Her hair was stirring around her shoulders in a way that made the servants stare while trying to conceal the fact. Ryan realized the tremblers were acting on her like mini doses of jolt. The wound in her shoulder had almost completely healed, although Mildred still had her in bandages and her left arm in its sling. He turned to see Don Hector eyeing Christy with keen interest. It wasn't unusual or unexpected. Barons taking a fancy to the exotic and stunningly beautiful redhead had caused them more than a few close moments in the past, and doubtless would again if they survived long enough. Still, Ryan had a strange sense there was something beyond simple desire in the sharpness with which those obsidian flake eyes fixed on Christy. He went to her side and put an arm around her, as if in a casual gesture of affection. She leaned against him.
Several years ago, a child was born into one of the northernmost Chichimec tribes. It was clearly a mutant, white-skinned, outsized, mute from birth. And yet the people could not bear to expose it as they always had mutant children in the past. No one who came into its presence could think of harming it. The child could influence the emotions of the people. As it grew, it demonstrated the ability to control the feelings of animals and mutant humanoids as well. The Chichimecs came to call it the Holy Child, and to worship it as a gift of the gods. Then, a year or so ago, a wandering, self-proclaimed priest, a madman more like, came among the Chichimecs. Nezahualcoyotl, he called himself, meaning howling wolf in the old tongue. He claimed to be able to read the thoughts of the Holy Child, and to read the future as well.
Do me.
Jack had been watching the fighting practice with what appeared total absorption. But perfect feral hunter that he was always keenly aware of his surroundings and what went on among them.
Or just plain old-fashioned charlatan.
Or both.
Whatever his true abilities, Howling Wolf persuaded the Chichimecs, and it appeared their Holy Child as well, it was their destiny to join together with the witches, the ones you would call muties, to conquer the valley. And then, who knows, perhaps the whole wide world. This self-proclaimed prophet may or may not have the slightest notion of how big the world is, but he has assembled a force large enough to conquer the valley, unless we act decisively and together. Even monstrous mutant creatures such as the Viboron, the giant rattlesnake you said you encountered on your journey into the valley, have come to join the horde. All serve the Holy Child with fanatical devotion, which means they serve Howling Wolf.
So that's what you're up against, Don Hector. What are your chances?
We will win. We must. They have numbers on their side and mindless courage. We have, as you are aware, a decent if not inexhaustible supply of modern small arms. Most importantly, we have training, will, and discipline. Even our common troops, although they are not honed to such a flawless edge as these my eagle knights you see in front of you. But we must have unity of action and purpose, which means unity of command. And that, my friends, is why Don Tenorio and his people must submit. As surely you must see, being wise in the ways of the world yourselves.
Unity of command's an important principle, Don Hector, right enough.